Let's head to the United States to our correspondent Ron Elving of NPR. Hello, Ron.
Good to be with you, Catherine.
Now, interesting things happening with Iran at the moment. What are the implications for the nuclear deal?
The new president in Iran is an unquestionable hardliner. There is no question he is part of a totalitarian, authoritarian government. However, he wants to deal with the United States and try to get the sanctions that the United States has imposed on Iran lifted by cooperating with regard to the nuclear program. That's what President Obama did, and that's what President Trump undid while he was president. He put the sanctions back on. They have bitten very deep, and it has hurt Iran, particularly at a time of pandemic stress. And this new president, Raisi, while he is no friend of the United States and is really more of a friend of such autocrats as, Syria's Bashar Assad and so forth, he is willing to talk about some kind of deal to restrain the nuclear program in Iran. And that at least would seem to be good news for the international community.
The complication, I guess, is that deal has already gone backwards with the previous president pulling out of it. So it's not a case of trying to sustain arrangement now. It's a case of trying to revive one, is it not?
Yes, that's quite true. And because there has been damage done in the sense of Iran going back to exceeding the limits on the development of nuclear power and theoretically nuclear weapons as well, and certainly there is no question but that they want nuclear weapons, if they have made progress that cannot be reversed at this particular point, then ground has been lost that cannot be regained. But the European community and others that have negotiated with Iran still see a value in retarding the program as much as possible.
Where are the negotiations actually at? Are there diplomats working on it right now?
They are. Yes, there have been back-channel negotiations going on for some while. It never really entirely stopped, but the compliance on the part of Iran was terminated for a period of time, and the sanctions were put back on. Actually, the sequence was the opposite. Trump took the deal and essentially tore it up and put the sanctions back on. And in reaction to that, the Iranian regime resumed the program full bore. And this is what has been, however, in negotiation, even while all seem to be in reverse, talks have been continuing. There is a chance that they can make some sort of deal fairly quickly if both sides really want to.
Now, an interesting case before the Supreme Court that it has just ruled on to do with student athletes.
Yes. Yes, and this could have far greater implications than it appears on the surface. Right away, it was just a small case of whether or not colleges could give athletes computers and some other educational benefits, things of value, over and above what, say, the average student was getting, as an inducement to high-value athletes to come to one particular school as opposed to another. That's an extremely competitive business in this country, and that is between the colleges competing for best athletes, particularly in football and basketball, and then making a great deal selling tickets to watch those athletes to people who will pay a great deal of money for those games. And the difference between that and professional football or basketball or any other sport is simply that the athletes aren't getting paid. The institution is making money, in this case the universities and colleges, and it's a great deal of money. So the athletes have objected to that. They are being, in a very real sense, exploited. And so in this instance, they were just talking about some rather minor emoluments of one kind and another, benefits, special benefits. But the implication of what the court has done is that there really is no distinction between money being made on professional sports and college sports. The difference is just who gets to make the money.
Now, staying with the Supreme Court, Obamacare is back there again. What's the kind of challenge that's being brought?
Well, this particular challenge appears now to to have been answered. The court has ruled 7-2, great surprise to many people that it was so lopsided, but even most of the conservatives on the court agreed that Obamacare could go forward on the particular challenge that had been brought by Texas and some others who were maintaining that the previous court rulings that kept Obamacare alive depended on this mandate that everyone had to get insurance. And when that was lifted, they said that the other court rulings had to fall. The court disagreed. The court was willing to let Obamacare go forward. We have added 10 million people to Medicaid in the last year because of COVID. We are moving one step at a time. Obamacare, expanded Medicaid, results from this pandemic experience, we are moving one step at a time towards a national health care system such as the rest of the developed world has. And that has been a very long struggle in this country. It's been going on more than 75 years. And now we seem to be gradually moving in the direction of Europe and the rest of the civilized world.
It is interesting, though, as you say, that Supreme Court perceived to be conservative in its balance following appointments, the last appointment particularly made by the former president. It's a bit of a curveball to throw you right now, but what was the actual sort of principle being debated on, and did it stand, was there a constitutional argument that was certainly clearly articulated?
There was a constitutional argument, but it really had been dealt with by the court in an earlier ruling, all the way back in 2012. And John Roberts, the Chief Justice, is still there, and he still had the same view of how the law was being operated and being constitutional. And this rather more creative approach to saying that under the previous rulings, the mandate was crucial to the way that the court ruled the law was okay, that it was constitutional because the mandate could be considered a tax. Because that was so crucial to the earlier ruling, once the Congress and President Trump took away the mandate, these folks from Texas thought, hey, maybe that means the whole thing collapses now. John Roberts wasn't having it. And even two of the three Trump appointees on the court weren't having it either. So at this point, I think the Obamacare debate, at least as far as the Supreme Court, appears to be over, and Congress certainly is not in a mood to repeal it now that the Democrats are, at least for the time, in control. So Obamacare is going to be the law of the land for some while.
Now, the former president, of course, remains very much in the headlines and very much a figure of power in the Republican Party, as well as having some legal investigations into his affairs, his previous business affairs and tax affairs. Where are things at?
Things are here that Trump is supposed to have his first rally, his big rally that people have been waiting for him to have since the election, this week in Northeast Ohio, but we still don't have the final details. Obviously, he does not have all of the trappings of the presidency that he used to have in terms of planning and staging an event. So this one's going to be on his dime, and we still don't know how it's going to come off. At the same time, of course, all over the country, the state parties are pledging their allegiance to Donald Trump still at this point, the Republican parties. And yet, this past weekend, there was a major conference of conservatives from the western states that met and took a kind of straw poll on who people liked in the party looking ahead to 2024. And there was a lot of approval for Donald Trump. Most of the people there clearly wanted him to be in politics and clearly saw him as a leader or the leader of the party. But there was one other name, the governor of Florida, Rick DeSantis, who actually scored higher than Trump in a popularity contest, totally meaningless vote, just a straw in the wind, nothing terribly important. And yet it caught everyone's attention because other people's names are beginning to emerge and rise as Republicans look to the future.
Are there previous names we would have associated with a serious tilt at the president looking at it? I think Ted Cruz is still very much in play. But are we looking at a new generation who might come on and stake their claim, or some of the old guard coming back for another go? Because it was pretty ugly, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
For some of them, they got slaughtered, to be quite honest.
Well, Ted Cruz was perhaps the last one to be slaughtered and the last one standing, and he came in third in this popularity vote this weekend at this Western Conference of Conservatives. And that is meaningful because here's this fellow, Rick DeSantis, who I think it's fair to say most Americans have yet to hear of, and yet he was more popular than Ted Cruz, more popular than any of the other folks who ran in 2016, and more popular than any of the other new names that have been emerging since, people like Josh Hawley, a senator from Missouri, who's got a real big head of steam or thinks he does, and even in this case, more popular by a few points than Donald Trump. So Ted Cruz would have loved to have been in that position. He was actually down in number three position.
All fascinating stuff. Thank you as always, Ron Elving, Senior Editor and Correspondent, Washington Desk for NPR News, and our US correspondent